We appreciate this valuable time to share this space with you guys.
Excellent. And as I am learning more about our African heritage, I would like to thank Baba Dar and Baba Sharif for being here. Thank you very much. And so, listeners, our email address is ORCBU10, and that's the number 10, at gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Please join us in our ever-evolving adventure of representing Black union workers. And with that, for this month, we'll say, holla!
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality? It is the way you get along with other people around you and with your changing environment. You want certain things from other people. The way to go about getting those things reveals your personality. Your personality is the way you affect other people. Think about that. The way you affect other people.
KBOO Portland.
Nobody told me that they like me.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Recall press 2. If you would like to permanently block your number from receiving calls from this facility, press 6. Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
So, first of all, can you tell me your name?
UNCELLYWABE.
Where are you currently located?
Right now, I'm located in Montana, Missouri. That's what I'm praying at. So, but I'm from St. Louis, Missouri.
So, why don't you tell me a little bit about your story?
Well, my story is, in 1994, my girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, had got into an altercation with two people outside of our home. They was fighting. When I heard some screaming yelling, I come running to the window. When I looked out my window, I see my girlfriend and this other female fight. But the other female got a metal pipe. She's swinging the metal pipe at my ex-girlfriend's head. So I could just see my ex-girlfriend keep jumping back while the girl trying to hit her with the metal pipe. In the mix of that, this guy that's with the girl that's swinging the pipe at my ex-girlfriend's head, he hit my ex-girlfriend in the back of the head and knocked out. So at that point, I knew I had to do something. You know, I didn't have time to, like a lot of people might say, why you didn't call the police? You know, in that spur of the moment, you don't have time to, you know what I'm saying, call when you know somebody that you love is in danger. So I immediately acted, you know, I grabbed my gun out of the drawer, put it in my pocket, and I ran outside. So when I come outside, the girl with the metal pipe at that time, she run towards me with the metal pipe. You know, time I get back in the house, I'ma bust your head, I'ma do this, you know, and she running towards, coming towards with the metal pipe. And before she can get on with me, I pull the gun out of my pocket and shoot her one time, like in the shoulder, chest just like Ariel. And she run off. So when she run off, I go over to where my girlfriend and the guy, he's like, you know, stomping her out in the street. She's like half knocked out. He's stomping her. You know, so I go over and shoot him in the arm one time, pick my girlfriend up, and take her in the house. You know, and at that time, I didn't know the law. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know whether, you know, I was in the right, I was in the wrong. I just know, you know, I had to, my instinct was like, save her, you know. And, you know, from that point on, I couldn't find out, you know, once I got locked up, the police charged me with, like, first degree murder and first degree assault. Once, you know, you get into the system and you didn't get this, I got to study in law. And then, it, you know, I read that, you know, it's a thing that calls defense of another. Meaning you have the right to defend someone if you believe they're in danger. Not only that, but it's another thing they call self-defense. So when I learned these things, I'm like, wow, like, I felt as if, you know, it was like a relief. Pressure took enough off me, I was more relieved, but at the same time, I'm still incarcerated. So I'm trying to explain, you know, to people, to whoever will listen, like, look, you know, this case is this, you know, this case is that. Not knowing these people, they, you know what I'm saying, they didn't lock me up, they didn't find me guilty, you know, in a whole nine. As of right now, I'm still sitting in prison after, you know, right now I have 27 and a half years in, because I had got out on bond for a short period of time. That's why I don't have the whole 30 in right now. But during the time I was out on bond, you know, I was out on bond for like a year and a half. And when I made bond on this case, it's like 4 to 5 days. When I made bond, I actually was shot up. It was like a certain situation. It kind of happened all over again, where I was over this female house and she invited me over the house. I'm over and this guy came over there. So when the guy came over to the house, I was right there and he got to get into it with the female. So I told her, like, look, I just got out of jail. I just made bond on a case similar to this. I'm not doing this again. Like, this time here, I'm turning my back, so I'm gone. You got to handle your own. You know, I turned my back on her. I said, I'm gone. I left. So when I leave, and soon I got in the car, the guy run up to the car. And only thing I know, it was a gun at my head. So I ducked. So when I ducked, he shot me 3 times in the back, which paralyzed me from the waist down for the rest of my life. So paralyzed and braced, you know, at that point, my life changed tremendously. But, you know, I still had this case pending over my head. So when it came time to go to court and everything, you know, they were off me. I had them down to like 7 years. So they was like, well, we want you to snatch out on 7 years, but you gotta plead guilty. So I'm asking them, like, why is I'm pleading guilty to 7 years when my case is a self-defense case? In the defense of another case. They was like, well, you know, they ain't trying to go through trial. You know, if you take the 7 years, you know, you would be out within like 4 years or something like that. And when I told them I wouldn't take the 7 years, it's like everybody got mad at me, you know. So when everybody got mad at me, I literally ended up with life without another life behind that life in 2015, because I wouldn't take 7 years. I was wrongly convicted, and I shouldn't be in prison. People, we don't recognize that, you know. I was wrongly convicted, and we're looking for people to support the cause.
When you were originally faced with this situation, had you ever been convicted of a crime before that?
I actually have. Mm-hmm. I was convicted of a parole violation, and I think I got convicted of parole violations over, well, no, I take that back. I got convicted of a probation violation, and I was on probation because I had caught a drug offense.
Your childhood, your life before prison, what were you doing? What was your life like then?
Honestly, my life before prison, I was a it was like this big concert coming up. So it was like, okay, I can't miss this rap concert. Like, this is like everything to me at that time, 17. I can't miss this concert, and I don't have no money. So it was like, okay, I only have one option at this time. They going to get some money because it's too short of a time to get a job. So I went outside with some of my friends, and I was like, okay, I'm ready to sell drugs. So they introduced me to the drug game. So when I started selling drugs, you know, I was making so much money where I was able to take care of myself, buy everything I want. You know, at 17, I had my own apartment. You know, I had somebody else, you know, get in their name. So I was able to take care of myself. So I lived my life just selling drugs and taking care of myself, because at that time, you know, young and dumb, I thought that was a way of life. And one thing led to another, and that's when this case came about. So, you know, I was 22 years old when I caught this case, and right now I'm 52.
And how long have you been in prison?
Well, I got found guilty, and I caught the case in 94. I got found guilty in 96. So I've been here 27 and a half years. I never walk again, so the medical staffer sucks. So it's kind of hard for them to really take care of you the way you should be able to be taken care of. So a lot of things I have to learn how to take care of myself. And I mean, and the stuff you have to deal with here, the people, the mindset of the people here is crazy. It's like it's indescribable. So me personally, what I do, I have to learn how to, you know, just like live life from behind a prison door. But I'm trying to live my life to the fullest. Like recently, you know, I got married like a year and a half ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. And she seen something to me that no one else has seen, you know. So with me and her, we started off as friends. So by us being friends and we talking, you know, she's taught me a lot, and I have came a long way. Where, you know, with her, my values have really changed. But before her, I was I'm still, and I was real big on rehabilitation. I mean, I believe we all need to change. So by coming to prison, I had learned that I had to learn how to erase all the stuff I was taught in the past in order to restore my mind with new stuff to make me be a much better person in the future. So every day, like I'm gonna give you a perfect example. Every day I wake up, I set myself a goal. I'm steady learning stuff every day, all day long. Like I wanna, like today I woke up like, okay, I know a lot of people gossip around here about one another, but today I'm not gossiping about no one. I'm not gonna say nothing ill about no one, period. Because I wanna be the type of person where I don't look at people like that. You know, I don't want to be the person to look at people, you know what I'm saying, in a judgmental way.
What about your family? Has your family been there? Have they been there for you throughout your incarceration? What's that role been in your life?
Well, as far as my family goes, they have been there for us, like phone calls. Like I have to call them. I come from a very poor family where, you know, like, all my family's like they live check to check, so they don't really have spur money to like, okay, let's go visit him or let's send him money, you know. So I don't have that luxury. But at the same time, you know, they love me dearly, and I do talk to them as much as I can, you know. Because it's hard in here, you know, because I feel like for years I've been jumping up and down, you know, screaming like, look, I shouldn't be here. And now it's like I'm starting to get people to listen, you know. So, you know, I really do thank for them people to come, you know, and help me as much as they can, you know. I mean, it's to the point where I had started like it's called a spot fund. It's similar to a GoFundMe, but it's just a different name. It's a spot fund. So we use that to raise money in order to pay this attorney that she's right looking into my case, and she's taking a great interest in my case because she see I was going to convict.
So, just to get back to the original case for just a minute, what about the family of the woman who was killed? What's their role been in this story?
I actually don't even know them. I'm sorry, but I don't know them.
Do you ever feel sorry that you killed her, or do you think that you were justified in killing her?
I feel sorry I killed her. As God, my witness, I feel sorry that I done it. I wish it never happened, actually. I wish it never happened.
Do you think there was anything else you could have done at that moment when she was beating your girlfriend in the head with a pipe? Or do you think that was your best option for saving your girlfriend's life?
I went over that in my mind probably a million and one times since I've been in cars already. And I said, oh, see, like, what, you know, it's like, what do you do? Like, how do you, because you have to get out, but I mean, you can't run to no fight, people swinging poles trying to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run to no fight empty-handed, you know what I'm saying? Because people swing. Like, what if I didn't? Because I even played in my head, like, what if I didn't had a gun, but I ran out there? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so these type of thoughts, they play in your head all day long because, you know, especially when you in the process of rehabilitation and you trying to, you know what I'm saying, change yourself and change your life, you know, so you think about your past, you think about your mistakes, you think about the wrong that you've done, you know? I wish it was something that I could have done, but in the spur of a moment, you don't have time to think.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have time to think. You just gotta it's like you react, but you reacted to the best of your knowledge or how you know how to react, you know? Like, I didn't know no other way to react. Like, I didn't, you know what I'm saying? It ain't crossed my mind, like, okay, call the police, because it's like, you ain't got time to do nothing. Like, what? You ain't got time to do nothing. Only thing I'm hoping as I'm going out this door, only thing I'm hoping, she ain't dead.
Yeah.
My girlfriend ain't laying down her dead. This was going through my mind. Is I'm too late. Oh, I hope she ain't dead. You ain't thinking, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, is it another option? Because, you know, honestly, at that moment on the spur, you know what I'm saying, there is no other option.
So what is your hope to come out of all this? Are you hoping for maybe clemency or a reversal of your charges? I'm not sure. At this point, I'm not sure what Missouri law is. You said you were originally offered 7 years and if you would plead guilty, but you know, you said this was self-defense, which it sounds like. And so because you didn't plead guilty, you were charged with 2 life sentences, life without parole. What are your options now going forward?
Well, they have right now I have a lawyer, so right now we can file a Rule 91, you know, and bring it in like under new discovered evidence, like you find new discovered evidence that was not, you know, present during the time of trial, you know, we can bring it in like that. Or, you know, there's other ways to bring it in. Or in St. Louis, Missouri, they have a thing called the Conviction Integrity Unit, which is ran by a circuit attorney. Now, the circuit attorney, they can look into the case again, you know, I mean, them options. Not saying that they're looking into my case, but they can look into my case, you know.
What would you like to do if you got out for the rest of your life? How would you live the rest of your life? What would you like to do?
Honestly, what I like to do, I mean, first thing first, I would love to see my grandbabies, you know? I mean, they're, you know, they young. I want to teach them. I want to teach them, like, lessons, you know, like what goes on in life. You know, you have to be careful because, you know, the wrong move or the wrong choices or the wrong lifestyle can end you, you know, somewhere that you really don't want to go. You know, I want to teach them that, you know, enjoy life, you know, love life and love people, you know, and learn as much as you can, you know. I, I want to be able to spend time with them. You know, I want to be able to spend time with my wife. You know, I want to be able to hug my wife and, you know, kiss my wife in a sexual manner. Is this something we can't even do in here, you know? You know, I want to be able to, you know, store like a non-profit, you know, where, you know, I'm going around and have people, you know, that's paralyzed and showing them that, you know, just because you're paralyzed, you know, you don't have to spend the rest of your life, you know, in sadness because, you know, you're disabled and you're different from other people because you can't walk or you can't move a certain way or you can't move a certain limb, that you can go on with life, you know. And I will also, I would like to get out and reach back to guys and her, because these guys and her, you know, that, you know, they don't have the resources. You know, they don't have people, you know, supporting them because they've been here so long, all their families have died off. So they just sitting here because they don't have nobody to help them out, you know. And I would like to get out there and, you know, even start a non-profit station, you know, dealing with that as well, you know, because get them the help that they need to obtain lawyers, you know, so, you know, so they can, you know, get, you know, the rest of their life back. You know, you got guys that are 16, 17 years old, you know what I'm saying? And they've been here, you know, 40 years, you know, but ain't nobody listening to their case. Ain't nobody trying to review their case. And they don't have people who they can call and be like, hey, excuse me, can you do this for me? Or can you do this? They don't have that. They don't have people, you know what I'm saying, able to send them money so they can go to canteen to get food. They got to eat the nasty prison food. Which half of the time the nasty prison food, it makes you sick. So, you know, I wanna have them guys as well. But I know, you know what I'm saying, there's only so much I can do, but I know my voice can do a lot if it's heard.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, St. Louis became the space for an awakening around the issues of racial justice, around the issues of mass incarceration. And St. Louis became kind of a central space for the movement for, you know, the movement for Black lives. How did you experience that movement while you were incarcerated? Were you aware of what was going on in St. Louis, you know, around issues regarding the shooting of Michael Brown and then the Black Lives Matter movement, which kind of peaked after the public lynching of George Floyd? How did people inside of prison react to that movement in St. Louis?
Well, inside here, to be honest with you, how did we react? It was like, it was amazing because it's like, it's something that's always been there. So it's like, it's not no surprise to us. You know what I'm saying? Where, you know, okay, some racial stuff didn't happen because it's been happening. It was happening before me. You know, like, I'm gonna give you a perfect example. It amazed me how you're even bringing this subject up, because this subject actually played a part in my case as well. Because, like, when I caught this case in 1994, literally, it was a lot of us locked up for first degree murder down in the St. Louis City Jail. I can't remember nobody case that was a second degree. They locked all of us up, and majority of us in there, we was all young men, Black young men, and we was all overcharged with first degree murder. When if somebody was to come back and look at every single one of the cases, they would see that 75% of people that was locked up at that time, cases was not first degree murder, but they overcharged up with first degree murder due to the color of our skin and our age. And even when I was down in the St. Louis City Jail, me personally, I can't remember seeing a white face that was locked up. I don't remember that. I can't recall one. I even had this conversation with other guys in here, and they was like, it's crazy that you say that. I don't remember nobody, you know, being on, you know, our tours that was white. And not only did they charge us with first degree murder, they also took us to court. And the prosecutors in all our cases, you know, did crooked stuff and stuff wrong to get us the conviction, to get just convicted. So, yes, racial and all that, it plays a big part. But being in her, and when, you know what I'm saying, everything got a kicking off in the streets, you know what I'm saying, with the George Floyd and all that, it was like, wow, it's finally getting out there. That this is how we've been mistreated. All these years, it's finally getting out there. That people saying that, you know what I'm saying, we, you know what I'm saying, been battling, you know, against the police at this time. When, you know, we should have to battle against the police, we're supposed to be all working together.
What would you like to see change about the system?
First of all, I would like to see the system fair. Like, be fair. Like, okay, let's be honest. I mean, even if it's a situation where you don't have the proper evidence, you know what I'm saying? But don't wrongly adjust the individual. Like, go through the process that was set up, you know what I'm saying, for this country. Go through it. Let's go through the process of this court thing. We know, you know what I'm saying, the laws is, you know what I'm saying, for this and for that and for this, you know? Okay, let's be honest. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's all be honest to one another. Let's all keep it real. And let's stop the fake and let's, like, you know what I'm saying? Let's all keep it real. Let's be honest of what's going on. Let's open our eyes and see, you know?
Is there anything else that you'd like to share?
Well, if you want to reach out and contact me, I do have a Facebook page, which I have, you know, people have me around my page, you know. And like I say, it's under my original name, Unzel Wade. UNCELL Wade, WADE. So I have a Facebook page, and you know, if anybody want to contact me, you have questions or whatever it may be, like I say, I'm willing to answer it. You got to give me a minute to answer, because when my people see you on there, I have to, you know, make a phone call to them in order for them to let me know what's going on. And a lot of times, like when I call, you know, my people, you know, they'll tell me, like, such and such thing is on your page, what you need me to say. And, you know, that's how I work that, you know. But I'm also located in Bon Terre, Missouri. And you know my name, Unzel Wade, UNZELLWADE. You can look me up. You can download the Securus app, and you can hit me up on my tablet. We have tablets where you can send me emails, pictures, and videos. So, you know, you can also contact me that way as well.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Thank you.
to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.